Okay, good morning everyone, and welcome back after we had a week off last week. Hope everyone had some sort of vacation. I would like to begin by wishing mazel tov to the lifeblood of this year, to Mr. Harvey Lichtman, on his the birth of a grandson, to Yoni Lichtman in New York. And they should be zocha to see much nachas from this child and the entire mishpacha. Okay, today's topic is somewhat connected to the parasha yesterday. We had in Parashas Mishpatim, the Torah speaks about the, among other things, the Torah speaks about the four shomrim, the four levels of responsibility that exist when a person takes someone else's item into his possession. And primarily, the Torah is speaking there about a situation where, let's say, Reuven would give Shimon something to watch, or to, you know, he's going away, and he says, "Could you please watch my car?" And then, you know, let's say something happened, the car was vandalized or stolen or damaged. So the question is discussed at great length. It's mentioned in the parasha and at great length in the Gemara Maseches Bava Metzia. The question as to who is liable for this, and to what degree the shomer would be responsible. This is discussed in, as I say, the psukim we find in yesterday's parsha, the halachas we find in the eighth parak of Maseches Bava Metzia. There is, however, a situation which is more common than we think, which pertains to a shoel. Now, we know that one of the four types of watchmen, one of the Arba Shomrim that is mentioned in the parasha yesterday, is the Shoel, a person who borrows something. If you borrow something from somebody else, you also take on a responsibility to guard it and to watch it. And the Shoel actually has the highest level of Chiyuv. The Shoel has a greater responsibility than anybody else, the Gemara says, because of the fact that he's getting all the benefit, it's being loaned to him, it's not in exchange for any sort of rent. And as such, a shoel has, it's mentioned in the parsha, the shoel has the high level of chiyuv. The question I would like to discuss today pertains to a person who borrows something from someone else without consenting with that person. What happens if you borrow something and you did not, you just assumed that it was okay, and the person whose item it was, you did not have the ability to speak to for whatever reason. And the question is, really, the question I like to discuss is not so much what is the degree of responsibility, but even more basically, is that permitted or not? In other words, that's why I say it's not directly connected to the parasha, because the parasha speaks about the person who borrows with consent, and it's, the parasha speaks about what the degree of liability is for such a thing. But what I would like to talk about is a common occurrence. What happens if you borrow or use somebody's property without their consent? Is that permitted? Is it permitted to do such a thing? Can you say, well, if he knew about it, I assume he would let me do it? And we'll see, hopefully, that there are practical cases where this comes up, and this is what I would like to discuss today. So the beginning of this discussion takes place in Maseches Bava Basra on Daf Pei Ches Amud Aleph, where the Gemara gets right to the point, and the Gemara discusses what is the status in the halacha of a shoel shelo midas. What is the status of a person who borrows someone else's item without permission? In other words, a simple example would be, you know, you need a pen, you need to write something, and you don't have a pen, and somebody else has, you know, in shul or whatever, here, anywhere, you know, someone left the pen on the table, so you say, I just have to jot down a few words, you pick up their pen and use it. So you're borrowing their pen without their consent. Is that permitted? So the Gemara here says, "B'shol shalom idas tamifugi." I have underlined at the beginning of the line that we're beginning from, that we're the Gemara cites the Gemara here has a whole discussion and says that it would that really the discussion hinges on how we view a shol shalom idas, a person who borrows something without consent. Says the Gemara, "Mar sovar shol havei." one opinion holds that a person who borrows without consent has the responsibility of a shoel, has the responsibility of a borrower, which is a certain level of liability, a high level of liability. Umar savar gazlan have. And the other opinion holds that a shoel shalomi das, that one who borrows something without the consent of that person, is considered a gazlan, is considered as if he stole it. And in the Torah, the responsibility for something that you stole, obviously if you steal something, you have to repay it. But beyond that, there is also a question of you know, if it got damaged, the thing that you stole before you returned it, what the liability is, and so forth. And there are various halachas that apply to a gazlan. And if thus we have a discussion in the Gemara, what is the status of one who uses someone else's thing without consent? Is he simply a borrower, or do we say he is a gazlan? And the Gemara here discusses it as part of a different, as part of a broader discussion. But the halacha in this basic shaila is brought in the Rambam, in the Hilchos Gzeila, and it's also paskened in the Shulchan Aruch, that we hold the halacha that a shoel shalomi das is a gazlan, that a person who borrows something, who uses someone else's thing without their consent, has the status of a gazlan, has the status of a thief. And that is the maskon of the Gemara here, as brought in the poskim. Now, further, if one looks further into the poskim, we'll see that not only does that mean that a person who borrows something without consent has the responsibility, has the liability, as if he stole it, but the Rishonim say, and this is pretty much universally accepted, that not only does he have the liability of a gazlan, but the person who does such a thing has violated the prohibition in the Torah of lo sigzol. When the Torah says you should not steal, so included in not stealing is not just where you take someone else's item without the intention of ever returning it, right? A real stealing, real thievery. But even a person who takes it with the intention that not only am I going to return it, I'm just using it briefly, I'm just using it for the time being. And after that, it obviously reverts back to the owner. I have no intention of taking it away from that person. So the Rishonim tell us that the prohibition of lo sigzol is violated for such an act. This is a halacha which is not well known, and you know, it's not necessarily what we would have thought. You know, we would have thought, well, the Torah says don't steal, that means that, you know, what the world considers stealing. But simply using someone else's thing without their consent, I'm not taking it away from them for good, they're going to have it back. You know, if my neighbor, went to, has a lawnmower that he mows his grass with, and now, you know, he went away, and I have a good relationship with him, and I have to cut my grass also, and I'll go take his lawnmower and use it to mow my grass, no harm done, doesn't affect anything, I'll bring it back, absolutely, I may even, you know, afterwards, call him to thank him. But the fact of the matter is that if you did not have his consent, so the Shulchan Aruch, the Poskim say, it's in the Shulchan Aruch, and the Rishonim say that not only is it prohibited, but this would be considered a violation of the Isra of Lo Sigzol. This is what it says. Now, go ahead.
So that would mean even if the person, he would lend it, you can't get in touch with him, but he would lend it.
So we'll see. So now, I always like to give the bad news first, and then we try to cut it down. In other words, this is as bad as it's going to get. Okay. In other words, now let's see, how practically this relates. But the fact of the matter is that this is in theory true. In theory, this is true. In other words, it's not good enough to say that, it's not a big deal. What's the big deal anyway? No harm done. I'll take, let's say a fellow leaves a hammer, there's a construction job going on, and so there's a hammer left lying around, and someone says, well, I happen to need a hammer right now, to bang in a nail somewhere. Just take it for a second. And what's the difference? No harm done. The hammer is made for that purpose. It's not going to in any way be adversely affected. Nevertheless, halacha is gzeila. that a person is not allowed to do such a thing. Now, where are the exceptions? Say, this can't be, we can't stop here, there have to be exceptions. So what I'd like to discuss are what a misconception, what people commonly think is an exception, and then what the real exceptions are. Okay, the commonly held view amongst us, natural, everybody think assumes this to be true, is that an exception to this would be that I'm sure if he knew about it, he would agree. In other words, he's not here. He left his hammer lying around. He happens not to be here. But if, you know, I can't reach him, I don't know his phone number, I can't get a hold of him. If you asked him, he would say yes. And in fact, let's say you went ahead and used it, and then you bumped into the person, and you told him what happened, and he said, you know, I needed to use your hammer. I saw you left it in your front yard. I needed to use your hammer for a moment. I hope you don't mind. And he said, oh, of course. What are you talking about? Of course I don't mind. What kind of question? I'm happy that you were able to do such a thing. So the commonly held perception is that that would make it mutter. Because if he knew about it, he would not mind. So the problem with this issue actually, it's very natural to think that, but this strikes at the heart of one of the most basic sugyas that we have in the Shas. When kids start to learn Gemara very often, so they learn the Perek Elu Metzias in Maseches Bava Metzia, and you have right at the beginning of that Perek is a very fascinating topic called Yir Shalom Midas. And essentially, Yir Shalom Midas means, if a person, we know in Halacha, if somebody loses something, you're not allowed to keep it unless you know that they had what's called Yish. Yish means that they gave up hope of ever finding it. If you know that the person who lost it gave up hope of ever finding it, then you're allowed to keep it. And that's a whole discussion in itself. But that is the halacha that we have of Yish. Now the Gemara in Bava Metzia discusses at great length what happens in a situation where the person who lost it, had they known that they lost it, would have been miayish. They would have given up hope. However, as of the moment, they don't know that they lost it. They're not aware of the fact that they lost it. In other words, when you found it, it could be it was right after the person dropped it, and at that point, it could be that he doesn't know. He doesn't know that he dropped it. He doesn't know that he lost it. So can we say now? So when you picked it up, he doesn't know. But at the end, when he did find out about it, he in fact immediately resigned himself and said, forget it, I'll never get it back. So the question is, can we say that the fact that later on he agreed, that later on he gave up hope, and even at the time that you found it, even though he didn't know about it, but in all likelihood he was going to give up hope, had he known he would have given up hope, so do we say that that's good enough? Or do we say that actually you need him to actually have this state of mind of giving up the hope? This is the discussion of Yir Shalom Midas. And the Gemara there in Maseches Bava Metzia, we have it here on page 2. The Gemara, while this particular question pertains specifically to a lost item that a person happened to find, but the Gemara makes analogies to several other situations in Halacha. And the Gemara here says on the first wide line, I marked it up as an arrow on the right-hand margin, the Gemara tells us that Amemar Umar Zutra V'Ravashi, three of the rabbis of the Talmudic period, Ikuhu Lepustana Demari Barisik. They happened to come upon the orchard of a man by the name of Mari Barisik. Now Mari Barisik was a landowner who employed sharecroppers to work the field for him. So the Gemara continues and says, in this field of his, in this orchard of his, he grew many luscious fruits. He had dates and figs, all kinds of things growing there. So the Gemara says, I see Arise Tamri Verimoni. So his sharecropper, his worker, went ahead and put out, in honor of these rabbis, he put out some fruit. He said, come, sit down, have something to eat. and he put down a whole spread of these delicious dates and figs that came from this orchard, and pomegranates that came from this orchard. So the Gemara says, Ameimar v'Ravashi achli. So two of the three rabbis felt comfortable eating it. But however, Marzutra lo achil, the third rabbi, Marzutra, did not want to eat from this fruit. Now, obviously here, it's not a question of kashrus, right? It wasn't a question of, well, I don't trust that hashkacha, right? Because of the fact these are all natural fruits, there was no issue of kashrus. So why did Marzutra not want to eat from the fruit? So the Tosfos here on the bottom of the page discusses this question. Tosfos says, apparently the reason why it would seem, the reason why he didn't want to eat from the fruit was because he feared that this was, that the sharecropper did not have the right to put out this fruit without the consent of the landowner. In other words, he feared that it was in effect stolen goods. In other words, it belonged to, it wasn't the landowner, it wasn't Mari Barisik who put out the fruit, but rather it was his worker. So presumably, one would think, when you read the Gemara, that that's what he was worried about. He was worried that who says that he has the consent of the owner to put out his fruit? So Tosfos has a problem with this, because Tosfos says that we know that, after all, a sharecropper is entitled to certain percentage. That's part of his job, that's part of his entitlement, the arrangement that he has with the owner, and he has the right to take and put out, and thus he could have put out for these people. So Tosfos discusses this as a very interesting discussion here, okay? And the Tosfos ends up saying that the concern was, what he was worried about was, had it been from the percentage that the sharecropper was entitled to, there wouldn't have been a concern. But what happened here was that he took it straight from the field. He pulled it right off the tree and gave it to these rabbis to eat. In other words, it wasn't like that. You know, he went into the place, the storage room where they have the entire harvest, and he took from his percentage. That for sure would have been allowed. However, here what happened was that he took it from the trees and he put it out in front of these rabbis, and the concern was that perhaps he's not going to report this. In other words, in order for him to be able to do this, he would have to report to the owner that, look, I took some of, you know, I fed these rabbis, these people came, and I gave them a certain amount of fruit, and therefore that should be deducted from my wages. So the Gemara says, so Tosfos explains that Marzutra, the rabbi who did not eat, this is what he was worried about. He was worried that the sharecropper isn't going to forget to report to the owner that he gave these fruits, and thus it should be deducted from his share, and as such, he didn't want to eat it. So this is the way Tosfos explains the Gemara. So the question is, you'll say, but wait a second, what do you mean he has to report it to the owner? But the owner himself, if he would have known that these distinguished guests came to his orchard, would have put out the food for them. So Tosfos says here on the bottom line that the Ein Lomar Shehayisomech Sheyisratzen Mari Barisik Kisheyoda, that it's not, we cannot say that he was relying, it's not good enough to say that he was relying that the owner would have consented had he found out about it. Says Tosfos, the halacha kabaya, because the halacha is in accordance with the view of Abaya, who holds that yish shalomidas lo have a yish, which means in our terms, in plain simple English, that retroactive consent is not good enough. It had to be consent at the time. And therefore, to go ahead and say that I will put out a spread of fruit for these guests, relying on the fact that if the owner will find, when he finds out, right, they didn't have cell phones in those days, he couldn't reach them, but when the owner will find out that these guests came, he will say, oh, I'm so happy that you put out fruit for them, says Tosfos, that wasn't good enough. Because halachically speaking, that would not work. Because you have to have consent ahead of time. You cannot have retroactive consent. This is the halacha, yes.
But part of the problem we see in a lot of these, in a lot of machlokasim, is lack of communication. Why didn't they just ask him?
So why? Apparently he wasn't around. I don't know. That's a good question.
No, ask the fellow who's the sharecropper.
Oh, maybe why didn't they?
His
maybe it was uncomfortable, you know, it was uncomfortable to ask him if you're going to remember to report it, like you're suspecting, you know, I guess like a human nature type of thing. All right, good. I don't know. As they say, a kasha na maisa. I don't know. This is what happened. So anyway, so from this statement of Tosfos, from this ruling of Tosfos, this is the halacha that most poskim follow. This is the halacha that's brought in the Shulchan Aruch, that in such a situation, if somebody were to give you someone else's food on the premise that the one who owns the food, if he knew you were here, would consent, is not good enough. It's not good enough. It has to be that you have an actual consent. And thus, the halacha comes out that as applied to any other thing that you're using that belongs to someone else, to say that if he was here and he knew, he would say no problem, would not suffice. This was the situation here in the Gemara, and that being the case, it would come out that we would not be allowed to simply pick up someone's lawnmower or somebody's hammer on the premise that if he knew, he wouldn't mind. This is what comes out from this Psak of Tosus, which is brought in the Shulchan Aruch, Choshen Mishpat, Simen Shin Nun Ches. Okay, so now, this being the case, so now we have to start looking for ways to deal with this. In other words, if we stop right now, this would be very, very bad news. So where are the exceptions to this? Okay, so an exception, now just for the record, in other words, this would apply, if you think about it, in so many different situations. This would apply if, let's say you're in shul and somebody has a box of tissues that the person has in their locker that they use for their own personal needs, and the person has a situation, they desperately need a tissue, and you happen to see that this fella has his box of tissues there and say, oh, no problem, let me go help myself. I'm sure if he was here, he would say it's okay. But apparently that's not good enough. So how do we deal with this halacha? So basically the exceptions are as follows. There are three basic exceptions to this rule. Okay, exception number one and exception number two pretty much both follow the same reasoning. Exception number one is if it is the type of thing that nobody cares about. Nobody minds. Nobody minds in this situation, which might be the case with the tissues, I don't know. But we could probably think of other examples. If it's the type of thing, nobody would care in this situation. Right? It's not just a question of him versus somebody else. Who would have a problem? That may be the case with the hammer. It might be. If it was a cheap hammer, it wasn't a particularly expensive item that somebody might say, well, I don't want you handling it because you may break it. Oh, you went to Home Depot and got the $9.99 hammer, the cheapest hammer that they sell. No big deal. It gets dropped 100 times. So it could be that nobody would be mocked it. If nobody would be makbid, then you avoid the question of it's like a non-sahai. Everybody knows nobody in the world would have a problem with such a thing. That would be one exception. Now, the problem is that if you think about this, how often do you have that? It may not be so common that you have something that nobody. There's always a person who has a particular hakpada. People have their own particular concerns. So another situation is discussed in the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, which is on page 3 here, which the Shulchan Aruch HaRav says on the bottom one, the top quotation, which I'm not just in the interest of saving time, I'm not going to read. The Shulchan Aruch HaRav says in the top that, in fact, generally speaking, if you use it, well, if you use somebody's thing without consent, it's one is not allowed to do that. Okay, but he says that if it's the type of thing that ein derech b'nei adam lahakpid alav, if it's the type of thing that nobody would be makpid on, then it's fine. That's what he says in the top. I'm not going to go into it any further. But in the bottom, he says another very interesting thing. He says in the paragraph, hey, So the Rav says, the Shulchan Aruch Rav says, Mikol Makom Mutar Leben Beisol Shel Adam Liten Prusa LaAni Olav No Shel Oavo Shel Bal Habayis Shalomi Daito. That there are situations where we say that it would be permitted for somebody, for a member of somebody's household, if let's say you happen to be staying over in somebody's house, and a poor man comes to the door and says, "Oh, please, can I have a drink of water?" So you say, "Okay, well, no problem here. Let me get you a cup, and I'll put some water in the cup and hand you the water." But you're taking the owner's cup. And you could also argue he pays for the water too. You're taking his cup, you're taking his water. So who says you're allowed to do that? So says the Shulchan Aruch HaRav that another situation where this would be permitted is in a situation where you know that this person, this very person, has allowed it in the past. If he has allowed you to do it in the past, then you don't have to ask him every time. If you have a relationship with your neighbor that he knows that sometimes you use his things, sometimes he uses your things, and it's no big deal, right? Let's say a common case of this would be, let's say they have a basketball hoop in their driveway, and you want to come and play a little ball, or your child wants to go and play basketball on your next door neighbor's property. So to just go ahead and use their court and say, "Well, what's going to happen? I mean, it's a regular basketball. They have a nice rim with a backboard. No harm is going to take place." But to use it without their consent is prohibited because you have to get their consent. So you'll say, "Well, but if they knew about it, they would say it's okay." That's not good enough. However, what would be good enough is if you know from the past that they allow this. If you know that, last week they let me do it, 2 weeks ago they let me do it. I don't see any reason that today should be different than then. So says the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, that would also be okay. That's also, in other words, you have a standing relationship with this person, or you know the person that in this situation they've allowed it, that would be fine. And therefore, technically, it's interesting where this question comes up, but if you want to be highly technical about this, the food that's in a person's home is the property of the homeowner. Now, that person's child does not own the food, right? In other words, my children don't own the food in my house. I do. So now, let's say I'm not home, and my kid has a friend over. Okay, and he said, "Hey, you want here? Let me give you a snack. Let me give you some food." So 1 second. Maybe you have to put in a call to me to find out if it's allowed, right? How do you know? It's exactly. You say, "Well, if my father would be here, he would allow you." So what? But maybe if he would know about it, he would allow it. What makes it mutter? What makes it permissible is the fact that you know for a fact that in the past he's allowed it. That I know, of course, I've had friends over before and he always puts out food for them. So in that situation, then you have the right to say that it's the same thing here. But if you don't have such a basis, simply by projecting that if I ask the person, they would allow it, that is not good enough. Okay, so therefore, when you have something like when it comes to, and particularly this applies when, without getting into the intricacy, there is a machlokas, the machlokas between the Shulchan Aruch and the Shach, but basically when it pertains to something that once you take it, it's gone, like food or a tissue or something like that, where you can't, it's not like a lawnmower, I'll give him back the lawnmower, it's not like a hammer. If I take his tissue, the tissue's gone, he's not getting that tissue back. So there, the fact that you say, "Well, if he knew, he wouldn't care," it's not good enough. The only way it would be good enough is if you know that this person is not makbid. You know from other situations that he keeps in his shul by his seat, he keeps the box of tissues, and I know that he always tells everyone, who comes, "Yeah, sure, please, anytime you want, take it." Then you could take. But if it's a new person in the shul, and you say, "Well, come on, for one, I desperately need a tissue," and who in his right mind, if the guy was here, would he be makbid? So in that situation, it's highly questionable if you could rely on that. If you know the person, or if it would be the type of thing that nobody in the world would be makbid. Nobody would care. It depends what that is. It's hard to say from situation to situation what that would be. So these are the first two exceptions. In other words, again, an exception would be if it's a type of thing that nobody minds, or if it's a situation where I know that this person always allows it. Yes. Yeah, you could establish. I don't know if you meet three times, but you could establish. In other words, it's known. I know from past dealings. I know my neighbor allows my kids to play ball in his hoop. I mean, this is real life. My next door neighbor allows my sons to shoot a basketball in his hoop. So they don't have to ask every time, because of the fact that we have a standing relationship. This is the way it is. So they never, you know. Now, if there was a particular time that something was going on that I have reason to suspect they might not want it to be played right now, right? Let's say to pick up their basketball when it's raining and maybe the ball's going to be bounced into a puddle and maybe it'll be damaged or something like that, then you don't have the right to say it, because how do you know? Maybe he would be machped. But if it's a standing relationship, then it's all right. Yeah.
What if your kids have a friend over? Is there a fine for them?
So yes, I'm saying if your kids have a friend over, so for the friend to go ahead, in other words, technically, you know, I don't want to make everyone sugar, but technically, for a child is using the parent's property, right? So where do you have the right? You know, the kid, you know, goes ahead and serves a lavish meal to his friends, puts out all the food that was for supper, puts out for the friends to eat. So what's the so how do you have the right to eat that food? So you have the right to eat the food, because you say, well, I know that I've been to this house many times and I know the parents and they're very generous people and they don't care and to the contrary, they always provide. So in that situation, there is no question. But if there's reason to believe that they might not want it, then you can't do it. And that's true if you go into somebody's home and the housekeeper is there. Right, the owner of the house is not there, but the housekeeper is there. And the house, oh, would you like this? Would you like that? You want a donut? You want a piece of cake? You want something? Right, now who authorized them to do it? Right, how do you know? So the housekeeper said, well, I know that you know, if the owner of the house was home, they would say it's okay. Okay, so it depends. If they do this in an ongoing way, that they always do this for people, as commonly happens, so then you can say, okay, fine, then it's good here too. But if you don't know, just simply by projecting that, I bet if they ask them, they would say it's okay, is not good enough. Okay, now, the third exception. Yeah, go ahead.
So what happens if the meaning was to do it on a one-time basis from the provider of the
activity? So then you couldn't. In other words, if the person who provided it, you're saying if I know from the past they did it?
No, I give permission, but only one time only. In my mind, I did it one month. What you're saying is, what we're implying here is that the permission is a standing permission.
Only if you have reason to believe that it's standing permission.
Well, no, right. If it was given in the past. I'm not
really, if it was given in the past.
If it was given in the past, yeah. It becomes a standing
permission. If you have reason to believe that this is the way the person is. In other words, if you have reason to believe that maybe they only let me do it once, then you're right. Then you couldn't do it again. I'm talking about, in other words, you know the person that doesn't care about this type of thing, right? If your neighbor lets you use the lawnmower or lets you use his rake or whatever it may be, so then you know then it would not be such an issue. Okay, now the third exception to this, which is what I'd like to discuss, because it's what it says in the Shulchan Aruch is not necessarily the way it's done today. The third exception is when it comes to the performance of a mitzvah. When it comes to the performance of a mitzvah, so we have a klal in the halacha, nichale le'inish le'meved mitzvah b'mamone, that a person, generally speaking, is happy that people should use his things to do a mitzvah. Okay, in other words, because why not? Let someone else could do the mitzvah with my thing, so it's a schus for me too. Right? And on that basis, we have a halach in the Shulchan Aruch, which you may, when you see this, you may cringe a little bit. But the halacha is, here we have it on page 4, the Shulchan Aruch says, in Simen Yudal of Arachayim, the Shulchan Aruch says, Mutter litol talus chavero ulevarech alea, that one, if you walk into shul, and you don't have your talus, okay, and but you're coming to the second minyan, the first minyan is over, and you know that this fella davens at the first minyan, and he put away his talus, and I see it there, I see the bag with his name on it, or I know where his cubby or his locker or whatever it is. So the halacha is you're allowed without his consent to take the talus and put it on. And put it on. The Shulchan Aruch says you could even make a bracha on it. That is a question whether that should be done for a different reason. But the fact is you're allowed to go ahead and take this person's talus and put it on. And not only that, the Ramah adds, V'hu adin b'tfilin, that this would be the same thing. You can go take the person's tefillin. Right? The one provision that it says here in the Shulchan Aruch is that you would have to put it back the way you found it. When it speaks about a talus, it says that if you found the talus folded up, you have to fold it up. Again, you can't leave the talus lying around and say, well, I used your talus. But according to the letter of the law, one would be permitted to go ahead and take someone's talus or someone's tefillin, or if you want to go broader than that, someone's shofar or someone's lulav and esrog that was left on the table. If it was not, obviously the first days of Sukkot, you have a separate situation because you have to have actual ownership. But in a situation where you're allowed to borrow, like the Chol HaMoed Sukkot, where you're allowed to use the lulav and esrog of someone that you borrowed. So let's say you came into shul and the fellow davened the first minyan and he had to run out. He left his lulav and esrog on the table. The halacha is you could pick up the lulav and esrog and say a bracha on it.
You
say,
you know,
one second. So the Shulchan Aruch says that it's mutter, a blanket heter. The Shulchan Aruch says it is mutter. However, equally surprising, the Ramah continues and says, Aval, Osir, Lilmod, Misvarim, Shalchavero, Belo Daito. But the exception to this would be to use his Svarim. Why? Because the Chayshinan Shema Yikro Sambli Mudo. Because we are concerned that maybe you may rip them. You may rip the Svarim. And therefore, you will cause him harm, and that he would not want. So therefore, the Shulchan Aruch rules that you're allowed to take his talus and tefillin and not his siddur, which is exactly the opposite of what we would think. Right? We would say, the siddur, yeah, for sure, siddur is not a personal thing. But you can go put on his talus. What do you think this is? Right? You can go put on the guy's talus, you can go put on the guy's tefillin. But the Shulchan Aruch says that this is mutter. I will tell you, I once had this experience. Myself, I was in Eretz Yisrael about 10 years ago, and I was coming out of, we went to a tour, we went to the Maris Machpelah, and there was a blizzard. We didn't listen to the weather report. There was a blizzard that started to snow. I was there in the wintertime. It started to snow as we were coming out of Hebron, and it was a very, very heavy blizzard, and we got stuck on the highway. We had nowhere to go. They couldn't clear the road. It was coming down several inches per hour, and it was a tremendous traffic jam, and we were stuck. So we basically sat the whole night on the road, and then eventually in the morning, the Israeli army came. It wasn't such a safe area, but they came, and they evacuated us to Kiryat Arba. The incident took place on a Thursday. It was Thursday evening, and then Friday morning, they brought us to Kiryat Arba, and they gave us the news that there was no way we could get back to Yerushalayim for Shabbos because they had 18 inches of snow and they will not be able to plow the roads. So we were stuck. But among other problems, no one had any clothes other than what they were wearing, so it was remarkable. The people from the community all came forward and offered us changes of clothes. It was a very, very beautiful sight. But one problem was that no one had the tefillin. In other words, I didn't take my talus and tefillin. I thought I was going for a few hours. So there was a yeshiva there that I went into. The yeshiva apparently that day was not in session. I don't know why, but they had daven there in the morning, so they had many pairs of tefillin. And I had no choice. I went ahead and I opened up people's tefillin and I used them, relying on this psak of the Shulchan Aruch that in case of need, you could go ahead and take someone's tefillin without the consent. Yeah.
So the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch is not for anything but accidentally dropped the tefillin?
If what? If
they accidentally dropped the tefillin.
If you can't damage the person's thing, no, for sure. In other words, you have to be careful. In all these situations, you have to be careful not to damage the person. But the fact is that the psak here is given that you would be allowed to use it. That you would be allowed to use it. Now the question is, does this apply today? So we have the Aruch HaShulchan, it's not on the sheet. But the Aruch HaShulchan, when he says over this halacha, says that in his opinion, this is not necessarily current. Because he says that it depends on the situation. When it comes to a talus, he says, what if it's a brand new talus? A brand new talus. I don't want someone else. You know, especially by us today, where the standards of hygiene, we're so careful, and people are very uncomfortable lending out their clothes to other people. Nobody wants to lend out, you know, not nobody, but oftentimes people are concerned about such things. So the Aruch HaShulchan says that in that situation, you would not be allowed. If you have reason to believe that the person is machbid, that he might not want it, so then you can't take his tefillin, you can't take his talis, because of the fact, let's say it's a hot day, and a person just came here in Miami, a person comes in to daven, it's already in the morning, in the summertime, it's already very hot, and he walks in, he's all sweated up. You think that guy wants you putting on his tefillin? You think he wants you putting on his talis? Maybe not. You know, today, the general attitude that, sure, take my thing and do a mitzvah with it, it might not apply in every situation. Today, where people have, you know, everyone has their own talis, so sometimes a person could be makbid. You know, what standard of hygiene do you go by? You're going to go put the talis over your head? You know, maybe, you know, I'm concerned that I have hygienic concerns about someone doing such a thing. You're going to get sweated up. So I don't want that. So therefore, while nobody actually overturns the psak of the Shulchan Aruch, but what the Aruch HaShulchan says is that you really have to make a judgment call. You have to say, is it the premise for why this is permitted is because of the fact that anybody would want someone to do a mitzvah with my property. But that might not be true. That might not be true. It depends. If you're shipwrecked and this is the only pair of tefillin, then maybe so. But so tell the guy, let him go home and get his talus later. With all due respect, you know, I just got this talus. I just brought it. I just got it back from the cleaners. And I would really prefer that nobody else should wear it. I'm not saying that this is the attitude necessarily a person should have, but we find this. We find this, and with tefillin, and I've seen situations where people took someone else's tefillin, then they have problems because, wait a second, I'm a lefty, and this person's a righty. So, you know, I'll just change the kesher on the tefillin, I'll untie, and I'll put it there, and he ties it out, and I tie it in, and all kinds of other things, and the shel rosh is too small. I will tell you that when I had that situation, I had to go through about 15 pairs of tefillin because I put on tefillin left-handed, and I happen to have a large head size. So I could not find a pair of tefillin that was a lefty and was big enough that I could put it on my head. It took me about 15 pairs of tefillin till I found one that was good. And Baruch Hashem, it was yeshiva, they had a whole supply of them there. But the fact of the matter is, but then you ask yourself, you know, so what would be, I could have said, yes, I'll play around with it. You know, I'll leave him a note, you know. A mitzvah was done with your tefillin. Thank you very much. You can't leave him in a worse situation. In other words, you could use it, but you have to use it when you believing that he would consent. And so too with the lulav. You know, okay, some people are very, very makbid. If this person just spent who knows how much money on his esrog, you know, and you have reason to believe that, you know, he wants it held a certain way and he doesn't want people to just look at it. He's very, very meticulous. So then maybe you couldn't use it. So therefore, you have these situations where what it says in the Shulchan Aruch requires some discretion. And the flip side is also true. The contemporary poskim of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and other people say that today with Sfarim, that Sfarim are much more available, they're mass-produced, it's not, if Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was asked to Shiloh, if you show up at the Kosel Maravi, and you find, you go to Davin, and you want a sitter, and you open up, so they have some sidurim that are the property of the Kosel Maravi, whatever, the shul there, you know, the person who's in charge. But let's say you find a personal sitter. Somebody left a personal sitter there. So can you use it or not? Can use it. This is some guy's sitter. It doesn't say property of the you know, the municipality or whatever it is, right? This is somebody's sitter. So he says, according to the Shulchan Aruch, he can't use it. So he said that first of all, poskim say that today it doesn't apply because there are svarim, an abundance of svarim, and therefore you could go ahead and use it on that basis. People aren't so makbid, it's not such a big deal. And also, if a person leaves it lying around, there is a presumption that he doesn't care. In other words, if a person leaves a sefer in shul, and he leaves the sefer lying around, so if he really cared so much, he would have put it away in his locker, he would have put it, hid it, right? But so therefore, on that basis, Rav Zalman Auerbach allowed it. But you know, again, you have to use discretion. And the Mishnah Brura here even says that to go ahead and that all of these heterim, to use someone's talus or his tefillin, that's only to use it on a temporary basis. But to use it consistently, to go every day and put on someone else's tefillin, that for sure you could not do. Another thing the Mishnah Brura mentions is to go ahead and take it out of the place that you found it. In other words, let's say you find a sefer, somebody left a very interesting sefer in shul, and you know this person is out of town. They're away for yontif. They went away, and they have a very interesting sefer that they left in the shul. So I say, you know, I'd really like to look into the sefer. I'm going to take it home. I'll take it home, and I'll bring it back before he comes back. It'll be right where he left it, and anybody would be happy for a mitzvah to be done with his property. That you can't do either. You could only do it, says the Mishnah Brura, you could only do it in this place where you found it. So to pick up a sefer and browse, that you could do, but otherwise not. This is the third exception, which speaks about using someone else's property for a mitzvah. Now, just before we end off, I would like to just apply certain practical applications of this law of using someone else's property without their consent. There is a halacha that is brought, it's based on a Gemara and the Rashbam, Maseches Bava Basra, that says that when we say using someone else's item is considered stealing it, that applies not only to actual usage, like taking a hammer and banging with it, but it applies also to standing on someone else's property without their consent. To stand on someone else's property without their consent is also considered by the poskim to be shol shalomidas, that is a gazlan. And therefore, to go ahead and take a shortcut through someone else's backyard, because this, I can get to shul faster, or I can get to this place faster, and I'm going to walk through someone's property. So without their consent, you have exactly this shaila. And even if you say, well, but the guy, if he knew that I was going to shul, he would say that it's okay. That's not good enough, because you have to have the consent in advance. Unless it's the type of thing that nobody would be concerned about. But you can't really say that when it comes to walking through someone's property.
Using someone's driveway to make
okay, I'm getting to that. Next situation. next situation. Parking in someone else's parking lot. Or parking in someone else's parking space. Or perhaps parking on someone's swale here. Right, where you say, well, I'm not sure. I'm assuming that the swale is the property of the person who owns the house. I may be wrong. I don't know who knows on the property of the city. But it's the rishus. But now let's say the person went ahead and planted flowers on this swale. So you say, I don't know the exact legality of it. Maybe some of the attorneys here could help out. But my impression is that the owner of the house has the basic right to it. He's responsible to take care of it and so forth. So to go ahead, if a person puts something there that indicates that he doesn't want you to park on his swale, so to go ahead and say, but I'm rushing to Mincha. Yeah, okay, so you're rushing to Mincha, but that doesn't matter because the fact is that the person doesn't want you parking there. So that could be outright Zela, but even if you'll say, but had he known that I was going to shul, he would have said yes, but not everybody says yes in that situation. See, even if this guy would have said yes, and even if you're confident that this guy would have said yes, that's not good enough unless you have some sort of consent from him, a past experience. If you know that he allows people to park there, that's fine. But if not, not. And the same thing would be true if a person had a parking lot, you know, they had a store with a parking lot, and the parking spaces are there for the usage of the customers. And you want to go ahead and park there because you're going somewhere else. So, you know, again, it would depend. If it's a large lot and, you know, there are very few customers, and therefore you say, well, anybody in this situation would allow it. Maybe. But this is a question, whether a person is really allowed to do that. Another example where this comes up, this is, I can't tell you how many times I've seen this, the famous switching coats in shul, right? That you show up, you brought a raincoat to shul, and you come at the end of davening, and lo and behold, you know, your coat has been taken by somebody else, or your hat, or whatever, mistakenly was taken by somebody else. And you say, well, no problem, you know, I'll just take his. He left his, he took mine, and he left his. He didn't walk out with two coats, so he left his coat here. So I'll take his coat until this thing straightens itself out. Now, is that really permitted? Because you're using his coat without his consent. So you'll say, well, he's using my coat without my consent. But okay, that's true. He didn't do it. That you know, the fact that he did the wrong thing doesn't permit someone else to do the wrong thing. In other words, he doesn't realize it. He didn't do it maliciously. He thinks he took his coat. He doesn't realize. Right? So to go ahead and say, I'll use his coat, I don't know, is a question whether a person would be allowed to do that. And finally, the great shiloh of our time, using someone else's unsecured Wi-Fi. Right, if you're in a situation where somebody has, you're going to go ahead and take your portable electronic device and pick up the internet on someone else's cheshbon, right? They have a Wi-Fi, personal Wi-Fi that has not been secured. So can it, now I don't know much about this, but from what I've seen and what I have heard, the if several people are using the same connection, the same Wi-Fi, that slowed down everybody's processing. In other words, now the computer will not work as quickly. You won't get the same, the connection to the internet won't be as fast. So therefore you say, but, well, great, there's Wi-Fi here, no problem. So if it's a public designated place where they provide it, like they have in the airport or in different hotels or something like that, so fine, they're giving it for that purpose. But if you know your next door neighbor has a connection and you could, you know, why should I pay for it? I'll just take my laptop, you know, right to the, you know, the edge of the property, and I'll sit out at night and do all my business on his dime. So is that allowed? So you say, well, what does he care? Well, so he might care. It may be that he's online at the same moment and he's being slowed down because of what you're doing. So this also would be a situation where a person really would have to consider that using somebody else's thing without his consent. If you had his consent, then it's fine. If you had his consent in the past, then it's fine. But to go ahead and do it on your own is highly questionable. These are just some examples. I'm sure everybody can think of other examples, but this is a halacha that we're not necessarily sensitized to that comes up a lot.
So what